Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Of course, you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And support for WEAA is provided by Interstate Batteries, featuring Interstate's AGM battery. And support for Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Money comes back to you in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can jump on to steinershow.org, and their banner is there. Click on the MeQ Baltimore Credit Union banner. All the information is there. We are about to have another one of our Countdown to Annapolis Summit, the last in our series, two conversations in this hour. Later in the hour, we'll be talking about the pit bull legislation. Right now, we're going to talk about fracking and the future of energy in the state of Maryland, which will be a hot topic in the state legislature coming up in this session. And, of course, that means we're inviting you to not to forget that this coming Wednesday, January 8th, we'll have our Annapolis Summit, the 11th Annual Annapolis Summit, where I'll be interviewing the governor, Speaker Bush, and President Mike Miller. And we want you to join us there from 7 to 10 a.m. and have your questions asked. It'll be broadcast here and on Delmarva Public Radio. And you can be part of that audience and ask your questions of the leaders of the state. So just go to steinershow.org and you can get your tickets and join us for the Annapolis Summit. It's an event you do not want to miss. So now on our countdown to the summit now, we are about to talk about fracking. We have with us Stephen Everly. Steve Everly is spokesperson for Energy in Depth, a Washington-based advocacy group established by the Independent Petroleum Association of America. Senator Karen Montgomery, who is a Democrat who represents the 14th District in Montgomery County. Joanna Diamond, who's Director of Environment Maryland. And Drew Cobbs, Executive Director of the Maryland Petroleum Council. And all welcome. Good to have you with us. You all there?
Yeah, we're all here. Good. Just cold and all.
Just checking. Yep. So this is a debate that whether or not we should have a study on fracking that's been taking place in Maryland over the last several years. And there's a lot of questions people have about the safety of fracking. Its future in Maryland is unclear. The pipeline being built now, that's being proposed, I should say, and the LNG terminal in Cove Point, some say shores up the future of fracking, or at least the use of that gas. And this month, public opposition kind of is hitting this kind of new momentum. But proponents say there's job growth, economic gains, given the unemployment and kind of the anemic local revenues around, that they're saying this is a way to boost that. On the other side, opponents point to pipeline explosions, gas contamination, potential spills, what happens to waterways. So it is a very controversial subject, and I think many people are torn and confused by it. And so let's just talk about let me ask you first, Karen Montgomery, as a political representative. Where are we in political terms? At first, it was going to be this group that we were going to have, a study group. That didn't happen. It was debated in the House and Senate. So give us a bit of that history and where we are right now.
I think you stated it pretty clearly, Mark. It's an area that's very controversial. Some people see the need for more locally provided energy. Others of us see a pig in a poke, to use an old-fashioned phrase, that we have opened up an idea that can cause the water contamination, air contamination, and although there will be some jobs, some of them are temporary, but what's happening when we export this, we're not using it ourselves, we're exporting it to Asia and to other places in the world. In the process of that, we're having to dig out the harbor, dig out channels in the Chesapeake Bay. And as we do these things, again, what do we do with the leftover landfill? I see this as an issue that has rattled around for quite some time. And as you just stated, I believe that we are going to have some very serious discussions in the legislature. And at the same time, I do think the American public needs to be aware of the enormous influence of the gas and oil industry and how it can affect you in your local yard.
And Drew, since you've been called out, let me go to you next.
Yeah, Mark, this is Drew Cobbs with
Drew,
API,
I can't hear you.
Petroleum Council. Just right now, the governor has established a commission to study this, and that's ongoing. That activity is supposed to go till August 14th when they're supposed to issue their final report. And they're looking at all sorts of different issues related to potentially potentially fracking and using this in Western Maryland, which is only a small part of Marcellus touches into Maryland. It's just really basically in Garrett County and a little bit of Allegheny. So they're undertaking their study, and I mean, we thought it was a little drawn out how long they were taking, but I think it's best to let that commission do their work, and let's see what they have to recommend. And that's supposed to be fact-based, science-based, unlike, you know, all this anecdotal evidence that gets tossed around.
So, Joanna, I mean, how much of an issue is it for the state of Maryland?
Well, it's not a huge thing for the whole state of Maryland. For Western Maryland, it's huge. You're talking about an area that's very depressed right now, and we did a study to look about the potential benefits to Western Maryland, and it showed only 365 wells would be drilled, but it would could generate up to $300 million in economic activity per year and provide almost 2,000 full-time jobs as we go forward. You know, so for that area, that is huge. So we aren't talking about Montgomery County. We aren't talking about other parts of the state. But for that development in Garrett County and far western Maryland would be a big deal. And we're talking about balance to things. That we'd be, you know, there'd be obviously a significantly regulated industry.
Joanna, so how would you respond to that? Because that, for many people in Western Maryland, that is an issue.
Certainly. And, you know, the main problem is that really wherever we've seen fracking, we've seen a threat to the water, to the air, to the health, to our environment. So, you know, when we're talking about economics, we have to talk about both sides of the ledger. There are winners and there are losers. Sure, there may be a few people who are getting jobs, but then there are other people whose property
can
values...
Can Joanne be, kind of be made louder?
Oh, sure. Can you hear me now?
We're having a few phone problems here. We're going to try to get those straight. Let me let you start over there. I'm sorry, Joanna, and then we'll continue to see if I can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I think that when we're talking about the economics of fracking, we really need to see both sides. You know, if we're talking about economic benefits, if we're talking about jobs, we may be talking about even some people seeing royalty from the industry, but then there are other people whose property values are significantly decreasing. There was a Texas study showing that homes within 1,000 feet of a frack site lost up to 14% of their value. We're talking about increased health care bills. And as Senator Montgomery stated, you know, the benefits are temporary, but the toxic legacy of fracking is permanent. This is a bad deal for Maryland overall. So what's happening is that these operators are setting up wells, and then when they're all gone, the roads are torn up, the water is contaminated, the soil is contaminated. The oil operators have left, and who's left to front the bill? These are the communities that have seen fracking in it.
So, Steve Everly, how would you respond to that?
First of all, can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes, sorry about all that.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. There a couple of things that have come up just in terms of the claims of air emissions and public health. The senator brought that up, and Joanna brought it up as well. There's a couple facts to remember here. In neighboring Pennsylvania, this is the same formation, the Marcellus Formation. Based on state data, the use of natural gas has actually removed about 500 million tons of pollutants, things that are linked to smog, acid rain, ozone, those kinds of things. And Richard Mueller, who's a climate scientist at Cal Berkeley, has actually criticized some environmentalists for opposing fracking because increased use of natural gas is actually helping us slash emissions of particulate matter, PM 2.5, which is linked to a variety of illnesses. So we hear all of these claims about how fracking is going to harm our public health and harm the air and everything else, but the actual data that we see is that what fracking is unlocking, clean-burning natural gas, is actually improving public health. And I would also add that state regulatory agencies in West Virginia, in Pennsylvania, in Colorado, in Texas, they've all looked at emissions data. They've done monitoring, extensive monitoring in some of these shale formations, and they've found that the emissions are actually below any sort of threshold that would indicate a public health threat. So, yes, there are emissions, and yes, this needs to be regulated. Drew mentioned that this is going to be a heavily regulated industry, and it will continue to be one. But again, we need to. If we're going to talk about health impacts, let's talk about the overall health benefits and the overall health impact, which is unequivocally good.
So now we're getting to the crux of kind of the debate and where people are very confused. We hear back and forth, Joanna, and I'd like you and Karen to jump in a minute before we go back to Stephen Drew. I mean, because this is for most people, that people are really confused about this issue, not sure where the reality or the truth or the facts live.
I think that we are told that things are not so that they are. There are spills right up in Pennsylvania. In less than a week, there were three major spills with 8,000 gallons of fracking fluid into a creek in a wetland. We hear that there are only very occasional accidents, only very occasional failures. The average rate of failure of these wells and of the piping is about 7%. In the beginning, with new fracking equipment, as it goes on, the failure is greater and greater. There is greater leakage into the groundwater. There is leakage into people's well bases. And we hear a great deal about we want fact-based. But what has happened, we aren't given the facts. We are not told what is in the fracking fluid. We're told it's proprietary.
I
have a miserable cold. I'm doing my best.
We appreciate you being here.
Sneezing and coughing here. But what I'm saying is we don't even know for sure because we are told we cannot know it. And we don't know what's going into it, but we do know some of the chemicals have already been forbidden in the dry cleaning industry, but they are being used. Now, one of the things that has been used, and I will agree, that yes, there are arsenic and other things that are brought in. These things are in the deep ground. But what happens is fracking brings them back up. So what we would have are chemicals and minerals that are way down deep. We'd never have them coming up to the surface, and fracking brings them up. And I think that we are not told the truth. And when we hear about facts, everybody's entitled, quote-unquote, to their own facts, but I'd like to have the real facts brought out. There are well failures, and there is contamination, and I think it's a little specious to say that the air is cleaner because of natural gas. We're not looking at the whole picture.
So, who's this? Was this Joanna?
This is Joanna, yeah. Just to quantify some of the statistics that Senator Montgomery was saying, I mean, fracking releases 450,000 tons of pollutants into the air. So the people who live close to fracking sites are exposed to a variety of air pollutants. And so what we've seen are a growing number of documented cases of drinking water contamination and illness among the nearby residents. You know, a great example, all we have to do is look next door in Pennsylvania to see the rolling environmental disaster of fracking there. We have, several examples from folks who live near fracking sites there that experience extreme headaches, bloody noses, sore and scratchy throats. The medical professionals there that are treating this have linked it to the frack sites. And this is not just the folks that are living near fracking. This is also the workers on the frack sites. So in terms of global warming pollution and releasing these toxins into the air, the release of methane, which is one of the main chemicals in it, which over a period of a 100-year time frame, a pound of methane has 20 times the heat trapping effect of a pound of carbon dioxide. So we're talking huge amounts of toxic chemicals that are released into the air as a result of fracking. Not to mention, of course, the water contamination and usage aspects that go into fracking, which, water waste can be polluted in several different ways. Where waste can fail and leak into the ground, the discharge of, fracking wastewater into rivers that can pollute, drinking water supplies. The disposal wells fail over time. We've seen this in Pennsylvania, where a disposal well lost mechanical integrity, and, the operator continued to inject the fracking wastewater into the well for another 5 months. Each well requires hundreds of thousands of gallons of water, and this is particularly a problem in drought-stricken areas. So we've just seen a plethora of health concerns, not only related to air pollution that is resulting from fracking, but also in extreme drinking water contamination.
So, and Drew, before we go to break here, and we have a few minutes of a break, I'd like you to kind of respond to that, because this is, again, as I said, where the rubber meets the road in this argument. People are trying to wrestle with this and figure out what to do. Drew?
Yeah, I think, once again, I mean, the Governor's Commission studying this, I mean, the senator asked about the facts. Well, they're accumulating the facts. They're pulling it all together and making decisions, and they've done some work on what's called best management practices. This would sort of be the regulatory outline that they would move forward with if they do approve fracking in Maryland. And it would be the most restrictive set of regulations or requirements or permit requirements, things like that, in the country. So they're addressing a lot of the issues that, that were brought up in other states. They also took the information from the other states' regulations to develop this document. So they're addressing, you know, all these issues that are being raised. It's fact-based. I mean, that's what bothers me is a lot of these arguments are just anecdotal evidence. You know, if you look at the studies and the thing that Steve referred to, that's EPA saying CO2 emissions are down. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, says they're significantly down and a bit lower than they were in the early mid-90s. So, I mean, that's a government agency stating that. And they said one of the major reasons for that was because of natural gas development replacing coal as far as power generation and other things. So as I said, that's all we're looking for is just let's move forward, look at the facts, and do this. This is a process that can be properly managed and done. And I understand the state's concerns and trying to make sure there are safeguards in place.
Well, but Steve Everly, let me ask you to jump in here, and then I'm going to ask Karen and Joanna right back. Is Joanna right back? I mean, the facts that Joanna were laying out about the long-term effects of methane, about the tonnage of pollutions in the air, what Karen was saying about the spillage that is taking place in Pennsylvania, are you arguing that those are not factual?
Well, I think that there have been incidents, and I don't think anyone is going to sit here and tell you honestly that there have been no incidents, this is perfectly safe, let's talk about something else. I mean, that would be a disingenuous thing to say. But what I would say on the other side is that if you listen to what has been said, it goes along with the standard sort of anti-fracking playbook here, whether you're in Maryland or Montana. You hurl as many accusations and claims and items as possible and hope that one or two sticks. And then the industry and the regulators are stuck just having to respond with facts to every single one of these. I'll talk about the methane thing because that came up. You know, Drew mentioned about CO2 emissions being at their lowest level in 20 years. You know, that's EPA and the EIA, the Energy Information Administration, crediting natural gas for reducing CO2 emissions. And that's the big thing here when we're talking about climate. As for methane, based on EPA data and several peer-reviewed studies, including, by the way, one that was financed by the Sierra Club, methane emissions are actually comfortably below the level that allows gas to maintain its environmental and climate benefits. The other thing to mention here is that, you know, when you're talking about methane, you have to look at concentrations in the atmosphere, not just whether there are emissions. Methane is a very short-lived gas in the atmosphere, and concentrations over the past 5 or 7 years have actually been relatively stable. So if methane emissions were out of control from natural gas development, you would see a spike in that, and that would be a concern. But we're not seeing that because the reality is methane emissions are under control, and there was a study done earlier this year with the University of Texas, financed partially by the Environmental Defense Fund, where they looked at on-site controls for methane, found that in many cases they were actually dramatically lower than what EPA estimated. Overall, it was perfectly in line with what EPA has estimated. So this methane issue has been, from the very beginning, sort of a side issue, a way to kind of raise doubt about the clear environmental benefits of natural gas. But the good news is that the facts tell us that this is an environmentally beneficial fuel for us.
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Karen. Is that you? Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of an argument that was going on some time ago where 9 out of 10 doctors, scientists in their white coats, would say cigarettes are essentially good for you. I smoke because they're good for you. I see an analogy here between the folk who are arguing for more development of natural gas through fracking, and I see the same kind of materials being dragged forward. And I see the whole idea of doctors or the experts. In the past, EPA has sometimes been a little less than diligent at looking at some of these things. I'm hoping that will improve. And I think as we move forward and we really look at the leakage of contaminants and the migration of contaminants and the frankly, the whole destruction of a lot of the environment. I know understand one of the arguments is that when you have these single-site wells but lots of branches, you are actually, to my possible way of thinking, is that you are spreading the possibility of more leakage going into groundwater. And so I don't take terribly seriously some of the rather pious, if I may use that word, let's deal with the facts, because I have seen, as we did with cigarettes, that facts occasionally are mutable depending upon who's discussing them.
And if I can just say, you know, when we're defining fracking, we need to include impacts resulting from all of the activities needed to bring a shale gas or oil well into production, which includes, you know, not just the point of extraction, but delivering the gas or oil produced from the well to the market. You know, often the industry uses a more restrictive definition of fracking than it's only the actual moment in the extraction process. Which certainly obscures the broad changes to the environmental and health and community conditions that result from it. And so we have seen the evidence and documentation already. This is, you know, these aren't just anecdotes. These are far and widely documented statistics. This is a known procedure. You know, we just look at Pennsylvania. There are 161 documented cases of water wells being impacted by gas drilling. So, you know, we don't necessarily need more studies or to hear more about what's going on. We already have the hard evidence in front of our noses. I mean, we're talking about 81,000-plus wells since 2005. The sheer number of the amount of evidence that we have gives us a clear sense of the growing number of documented cases of drinking water contamination and illness from air pollution that has been going on from fracking.
So, I mean, the other questions here I think that we need to delve into as well, which, and I think that when we had on this, the last time we had this program, with the argument about jobs and what an energy future should be. There's a lot of articles that have been written about that hydraulic fracking, which actually people don't realize has been around since 1940. Most people didn't even know it existed until recently.
Not the new forms.
What did you just say, Karen?
Not the new forms. Really, that only started with the multi-well pads. The fracking itself has been earlier, but not with these far-reaching side-angle pipes. That began in 2007.
The wells are deeper and thicker case now is the thing.
So the question becomes that this really does. I mean, again, we've all sides here have kind of thrown out a series of different facts. That I think can be illuminating but also very confusing for people. I want to kind of parse through those, talk about what the energy future might be in the state of Maryland, how these are connected or not connected to the arguments over LNG site in Cove Point and the pipeline, which we debated on the show just the other week, and talk about where this might take us. We're going to take a very brief break and come right back with our guest, continue our conversation about fracking on this countdown to the summit. This will be a debate in the Maryland General Assembly this fall, and you can join us, by the way, on January the 8th at 7 a.m. in Annapolis at the Calvert House, where I'll be interviewing the governor, Speaker of the House, and the President of the Senate, and you have a chance to be part of a live audience to ask your questions as well. Just go to steinershow.org and get your tickets and join us down in Annapolis. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and our countdown to the Annapolis Summit, with talking in this part of our program about fracking. And the last part of the program will be entering the debate over pit bulls. It'll be in the Senate and the House this session as well.
Okay.
Not with you all, but the set of guests. and we'll invite you all to join us again on January the 8th. In Annapolis. Go to steinershow.org and see about getting tickets to join us there in Annapolis with the governor, the speaker, and the Senate president, where you can ask your questions. On our way there, I also want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues impacting Maryland residents, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. steinershow.org or going to steinershow.org and clicking on their banner. We are joined here now by Steve Everly, spokesperson for Energy in Depth, a Washington-based advocacy group established by the Independent Petroleum Association of America, Senator Karen Montgomery, Democrat representing the 14th District in Montgomery County, Joanna Diamond, who is Director of Environment Maryland, Drew Cobbs, Executive Director of the Maryland Petroleum Council, and you at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages or tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on all that. So how do you all think this debate fits into the larger debate about our energy future, about where we need to go and how we need to get there? I mean, that's probably at the heart of this as well, that we that kind of gets debated around the edges. Drew Cobbs?
Yeah, Mark, on that. I mean, I think the part of the problem is we don't really have a national energy policy. And then I think the question also in the state level is you have these piecemeal approaches where you'll do one or two different things for energy. And, you know, the point we'd like to make is, you know, for natural gas, especially in the Baltimore metropolitan area and the Washington suburbs, they're benefiting from this already, this fracking process. You know, and that's what's released, this abundant supply of natural gas. So the consumer's benefiting, the prices drop. And the other thing, as far as jobs and the points we were trying to move on to in this debate discussion, was because of these lower energy prices, manufacturing jobs and other opportunities are occurring. So this has some big macro benefits beyond the initial debate that we were having. And as we go forward, this needs to be a part of the equation as we go forward. Renewables are growing and a part of the mix, but natural gas will help us get there. And obviously the benefits that has over some of the other energy sources are huge.
So, Karen, how do you respond to that when we look at this debate over our future, both in terms of jobs and where and what and how we get energy and what states are supposed to do?
You were addressing me?
Yes.
Okay. I do think, and I agree, that Western Maryland has need for jobs. I know many of the legislators from there. It is a problem. I don't think this is the sole solution. Often with fracking going on across the states, you have movable crews that come with it. And so a lot of the local people do not actually get all of the jobs that may be created but may not be locally jobs. The other thing that is happening when we're still focusing on digging out of the ground, blowing things up, putting in chemicals, is that we are still depending on what is already there. And I think that this whole idea of spending money on more natural gas fracking is taking away from what we ought to be looking at, which is more renewable energy. We are not putting the kind of money into renewable energy that we should be doing. What's happening is we deplete these reserves, we cause more and more destruction of the environment. I'd like to go back to water again.
All right.
Over and over and over again. In the East, we think we're so loaded with rain, loaded with water, all of this kind of thing, that we don't worry about water supplies so much. But in many of the areas where fracking is done, either the water supplies have been contaminated or depleted. Because when you are pumping out untold billions of gallons of water, and that water is not usable again for drinking water, you are going to be hurting that area. Now, as we do fracking, if we do fracking in Maryland, many of our water supplies do come from deep water sources. As we disturb a lot of this shale, we are probably leading our way to contamination of the major waterways. It's a slow process. It takes a long time to move through the underground, but we shouldn't be contaminating with chemicals such as toluene and others. I'd like to say, again, the job issue is almost specious. There will not be that many jobs for locals while they're being built, and many of the areas will be having their roads stressed and will be having large groups of people coming in and needing temporary housing and medical care and all of that that's not going to be there in the infrastructure. I think we need to think longer about this, not shorter. I don't think we should be doing it in Maryland until we have a more definitive study. And as I mentioned earlier, in the past, sometimes the EPA has been less than diligent in some of its work, perhaps influenced and perhaps not by having enough staff. So I'd like to give somebody else a chance here. And I appreciate the fact that the industry likes to keep in business and that they like to continue to make profits, but I don't think all of that should be done at the cost of local people and of the environment.
So before I turn to Joanna Diamond, Drew, you would like to respond to that?
Well, I think a number of issues. As I said, Maryland is looking at it. It's a manageable process. We can do that. The benefits do accrue locally on that. In Pennsylvania, initially, the crews did come from out of state, but over time, the numbers increased significantly that the local people, you know, got the experience and knowledge and jobs and were the ones doing the job. All the issues about roads and all that is covered. They're bonded. I mean, all these issues are basically addressed, and that's why the Governor's Commission is working on this thing, to address those issues. As I said, it's a manageable process. It can be done safely. It's a matter of making sure those appropriate regulations and requirements are in place.
And regulations are often written by the industry with the help of their lobbyists, I believe, and that is, I think, where the rubber hits the road for the average person in the state.
Joanna, what?
Hey, Mark, can I jump in here?
Is this Steve?
Real quick, just a couple of things, because we mentioned renewables and, you know, promoting renewable use. I don't think anyone on this call, and I can't speak for Drew, but I imagine the others on the call, I think we're all in support of renewables. I think we all love solar and we all love wind, and we want to develop the new advanced technologies. Interestingly enough, both the solar and the wind industries have both said that shale gas and affordable natural gas is the perfect complement to their future growth, because you need to have baseload power. It's the cleanest baseload option that's out there and the most affordable. And, you know, at that point, I would say, you know, why should we trust the activists pushing for renewable power when the people producing renewable power are disagreeing with them? I mean, there's a fundamental disconnect there.
So
what you're talking about, though, is putting people's drinking water at risk for more energy. We don't need a dangerous and polluting practice because we have so much.
Okay, you're going back into talking points right now. I'm talking about the renewables industry saying we want natural gas. We need natural gas to grow. What, so if you're not going to produce the natural gas and they say we need it because we've banned it, then how do you grow renewables when the renewables industry says we can't grow without it?
Let me let Joanna respond. That was you, Joanna, correct?
I mean, yes, that was me. I mean, we just passed a landmark offshore wind bill last year. That's where we ought to be going. It doesn't necessarily matter which industry says what. We know that we can harness clean and renewable and not dangerous energy right here in Maryland. And so the question is where we ought to be going. Fracking is dangerous and is not going to be the future of Maryland's energy. We don't need a dangerous practice. Regardless of what the industry says, we don't need that practice when we have so much clean energy here in Maryland. So, you know, what we're talking about is not necessarily what the industry is saying or what, you know, other types of energy. What we should be talking about is where Maryland should be going with this. And so when we're talking about energy, you know, a lot of this stuff, and Cove Point was mentioned before, is a great example of this, is that the industry aggressively is seeking to get export licenses for fracked gas to China and Europe. We're not even necessarily talking about keeping it in Maryland. So when we're talking about, you know, energy and where we're getting it from, we should be having a discussion about where we want our state to be going. You know, fracking costs us billions of dollars in externalities, like what we've been talking about, polluted drinking water, air pollution, and ruined roads. We can't completely dismiss those arguments because what we have to be talking about are both sides of the coin. And I think what we shouldn't have to be having a conversation about when we're talking about energy is wind and solar and renewable and clean energy sources that we want for the state.
So let me ask you this question, because we'll have to take a break here, but I'm curious what's going to happen in the state Senate, in the General Assembly this session around this issue of fracking. Very quickly, Karen and Steve, or Karen and Drew, could you tell us what's going to happen?
Well, I think Senator Montgomery is putting, I guess, the bill back in to ban fracking. And I'll give her credit on one hand. At least I think she's being much more straightforward than some of the other opponents of this who are just, you know, let's delay it, let's study everything in the world, let's put a moratorium on it. I mean, that's the end result. They just want to ban it. And I think at least, you know, the Senator is being straightforward with that. The bill was in last year, and it did not move.
Why it didn't move? Because there was so much pressure from the gas industry to keep it in the drawer.
I think the main reason it got voted down, and the main reason was that the study is out there. The governor has his commission. I think most people want to do the responsible thing. Let's wait and see what the commission recommends and says.
And at some point, shouldn't we be looking at all of the members of the study and having a good opportunity to talk with them also?
So that's this. So we will continue this when we get to the session with our guests. And
I imagine.
Yes, we will. So I want to thank all of you for being with us. This has been a really important discussion. Senator Karen Montgomery, 14th District in Montgomery County. Steve Everly with Energy in Depth. Joanna Diamond, Director of Environment Maryland. Juke Hobbs, Executive Director of Maryland Petroleum Council. Thank the four of you so much for this conversation about the future of fracking and fracking in Maryland here on our countdown to the summit of the Mark Steiner Show.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you all.
All right, Mark, thank you for hosting a debate.
Good to have you all with us. And before we go to our next debate and discussion about pit bulls that's going to be taking place in the summit, I want to remind you to join me at the 11th Annual Annapolis Summit, January the 8th, where I'll interview the governor, Speaker of the House, President of the Senate. You can ask your own questions. Just go to steinershow.org, and you can get ticket information. That's January 8th from 7 to 10 a.m. in Annapolis, live at the Calvert House. The Annapolis Summit is brought to you by Stevenson University, the Maryland State Education Association, Alexander and Cleaver, the Johns Hopkins Center for Livable Future, the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Our production partner is VBC. Our media sponsors, of course, are home station, WEAA, and our print partner and partner in the Annapolis Summit is the Daily Record. And reminding you all, this Saturday at 10 a.m., please join me. I'll be on Melissa Harris-Perry's show on MSNBC this Saturday morning at 10. We're going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we enter the conversation about what is going to happen around the legislation concerning pit bulls in the state legislature. Stay with us.